हरे ॐ सहन भवतु सहन भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so on this point of the living entity seeks happiness by serving other living entities, driven by a false desire for enjoyment. So, 21, 22. I am in everyone's heart as the supersoul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his face steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Endowed with such faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires. But in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone. Why are demigod worshippers considered foolish? Okay. The demigods cannot award benedictions to their devotees without the permission of the Supreme Lord. So the worship of demigods and the achievement of desired results are due not to the demigods but the Supreme Personality of Godhead by arrangement. The less intelligent living entity does not know this, and therefore he foolishly goes to the demigods for some benefit. But the pure devotee, when in need of something, prays only to the Supreme Lord. Asking for material benefit, however, is not a sign of a pure devotee. A living entity goes to the demigods usually because he is mad to fulfill his lust. This happens when something undue is desired by the living entity, and the Lord himself does not fulfill the desire. Okay, so the process is the person somehow or another has this faith in the demigod, so, or the idea the demigod will give him what he wants. So Krishna gives that faith. But still, the demigod can't award. The demigod's only an officer, right? The potency of the office comes from the Lord. So without the Lord's sanction, right, there'll be no benefit. So the foolish person, and Krishna's pointing out, thinks that they're going to the demigod, they're getting this result. What they're not catching is that the result is coming because of their, because the demigod is going to the Lord. And not only that, the faith to worship the demigod is also coming from the Lord. Right? So the intelligent person would go to the Lord. Right? Now if we say, like yesterday there was an idea that, well, we don't want to disturb the Lord. Right? But it's his process anyways. He has to give the faith. He has to give the sanction. It just appears that we're not bothering him. Right? So the point is, the sense is going to him, and one's a devotee, one would go with serving him directly, praying to him directly. The difficulty comes is praying to the demigod, you don't mind asking for anything. And praying to Krishna, then you'll think about what it is you'll ask for. Right? So that's the difficulty that comes up. So, yeah. So the devotee, he goes to the Supreme Lord for everything. Now here he brings out a point, though. Asking for material benefit, though, is not a sign of a pure devotee. Maybe a devotee, but not a pure devotee, right? There's be mixed, you know, the devotional element, right? Not. So then he means, even if mixed, still better to go to the Lord than the demigods. because the demigod it still has to come from the Lord. But it's also pointed out as the living entity goes to demigods because they're trying to fulfill a material desire, not a material need. Well, for the devotee, he's connecting whatever is his desires to the Lord. Right? So it takes on a different quality. So the devotee would avoid anything which would be he has material desire that has no connection to the Lord. That he would want to try to avoid. Right? Because that won't be favorable in his devotional progress. Right? But something needed that it can be engaged in the Lord's service, but it may also have some you know, of our own desire involved. Does that make sense? Still, it's better to go to the Lord. Because that's the process anyway. Krishna's awarding it. He just has this other method that you can go through. Because if you don't want to go to him, either because you're afraid if he, since he's the supreme control, he may not give you what you want. Which, as he pointed out here, he doesn't necessarily fulfill it. If it's not useful, but it's not that the demigod will give it either. Because it still has to be sanctioned by him. In other words, activities that are beneficial, right? In other words, something pious. Because pious means it gives a benefit. The point is who's the benefit for? Right? Does that make sense? You're not offering something to Krishna that doesn't have a benefit. Right? And technically, one shouldn't be doing something for yourself that doesn't have a benefit. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. It technically, if we look at it carefully, what can't be offered to Krishna won't have a benefit for us.
Yeah.
Like that. We may think it has a benefit, but it doesn't necessarily have a benefit. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's a legal thing in court, at least in America. If you can show that, that means that you have a case going, if you can show that they've taken LSD 7 times, then you can claim insanity. Like that. So it's not necessarily beneficial. Right? Like that. So that's why it's not offerable, right? Does that make sense? Like that. It doesn't matter, same person. So it's like we were hearing yesterday about, I think, Gauridas Pandit. Gauridas Pandit then installed Gornitai deities, and Lord Chaitanya had come for the installation. And then, when the program was finished, Lord Chaitanya said, okay, I'm going now. Gauridas said, no, you have to stay. He says, no, but you have the deities. He says, no, but I want you. He said, okay. And so then, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they went in, sat on the altar, and then the deities left. Like that. They said, no. Like this. So this went on for a while, but after a while, no one could tell who was the original and who was the deity. Yeah, so, yeah, don't, you don't have to worry like that.
That's worth it.
Okay. Yeah. So in other words, because it's not a useful desire, therefore the Lord may not fulfill it. You know what I'm saying? Then you have the element of your karma. If it's your karma, you have it, then it's there. But otherwise it may not be beneficial. So for the devotee the Lord may not fulfill the desire.
So going to the demigods and getting something that Krishna wouldn't fulfill and then just dealing with the karma afterwards, that's not gonna happen.
Means if you have to be very, very careful is that, as we see, as Krishna gives faith in the demigod worship, you want it, Krishna gives it. So if you want faith that being happy separate from Krishna is possible, Krishna will give it. It's what you want, right? Because he's not going to interfere with your independence. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Is they're worried that, Krishna, because there's a standard, then he won't fulfill certain desires. But the demigod, it's just kind of like it's an office, so whatever you ask for, you have to be able to get. But you're not calculating your karma and that, the Lord's sanction. So the devotee then goes to the Lord for things. So if it's something that you'd be embarrassed to ask the Lord, then one should question, is it worth asking for? Is it worth having? Does that make sense?
Of course.
Like that.
Yeah.
Like that. But in any case, you know, even it makes one contemplate it. One sees the weakness in that desire, right? And if one is confident that, no, it's something at this stage in life that needs to be there, and it's according to occupational duty, and so therefore it's not out of the, you know, out of line. So therefore, then if it's quiet, you go to the Lord for it. Still, that works better. Because in any case, how whatever method you use, it's still the Lord that has to sanction it. So why be indirect when you can be direct about it? Because that'll cultivate the relationship than trying to, you know, because if it was someone else, right, what would you say if you're supposed to go to this person for it, but you don't, and you make some other arrangements, what would they say?
They would probably be a little weird about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just right, going behind my back, you know, doing this and that. You know, they wouldn't appreciate it. So, you know, why would it be any better in dealing with the Lord? Right? I mean, the difference is you can't go behind God's back. Because any method you try, still he's the one sanctioning, no matter how far out it gets.
But it would seem like you could, like if you had to speak with the Prime Minister, you would go to his secretary.
Yeah, but the secretary is for directly the it's recognized that he's the secretary for the Prime Minister. But here, instead of going to the secretary and the Prime Minister, you go to another minister and try to get it done there on your own. But what they don't understand, why do they call it Prime Minister? Because the ministers have to take the sanction of the Prime Minister. Otherwise, if they could act independently, then what's the meaning of a Prime Minister? Is that make sense? So we don't think that it's because of lust. That's why Baba uses the word lust. It means when one's love for Krishna is being misdirected, then, you know, so here, lust, we would be inferring something very serious, right? Like that. So it's very, very focused, very intense. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah. So one's not using necessarily one's intelligence here. Because he says mad to fulfill his lust. So madness already indicates the intelligence is not there. Right? But for the devotee, he understands there's a desire here how to deal with this. You know, he has a family, he needs money, he needs this and that. But you go to Krishna like that. Okay. Because if you don't go to Krishna, then you'll have some other arrangement, and then that other arrangement, you'll have faith in that, and so then it will lessen in Krishna. Yes?
When I need something, then sometimes I don't want to bother, you know, a person, because they're very busy. So, like, I do go to somebody under him to get things that I feel are not so important to bother, like, you know, the temple president. You know, I will go to the temple commander.
Because that's the authorized fashion of following the order of the temple president. But here in the demigod worship, they're not considering, I don't want to bother the Supreme Lord, so I'll just go to one of the officers. They're just going to the officer thinking the officer is giving the facility.
But
the
how about for a devotee? If you do, like, not want to talk to Krishna so much, I think devotees do things for the Ganesh.
Yeah. So, but the point is here it said, the demigods cannot award benedictions to their devotees without the permission of the Supreme Lord. So the worship of the demigods and achievement of desired results are not due to the demigods, but to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by arrangement. The less intelligent living entity does not know this, and therefore he foolishly goes to the demigods for some benefit. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different situation. It's just as much trouble, because the Lord has to consider whether one is deserving or not and make a decision. So then, and the modes of nature are going to carry it out anyway. He doesn't do it himself. So the demigods are going to carry it out, but whether they're carrying it out because the Lord's directed him, because that's coming from the Lord, or he's doing it because they're just working within the modes of nature. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference whether they're representing the Lord, or they're representing the modes of nature. So when we go to the demigod directly, then we're dealing with the modes of nature. Though it's still the same trouble for Krishna.
It's like devotees will pray to Lord Shiva, because he's the topmost Vaishnava.
Yeah, but then that's a devotee. So that's different. You know, like you might pray to Lord Brahma as the head of the Sampradaya, that you might have the intelligence to, okay, we only have one head, we don't have four, so we're already at a disadvantage here, so, you know what I'm saying, that's the difference. But worshipping the demigods directly and thinking one will get some benefit, then one is misinformed. Yeah, but it's there, it's because they don't even notice, because you go to the temple commander, but you're not asking the temple commander to do something that the temple president wouldn't sanction. Right? But to the demigod, that's kind of the motivation, right? Unless it's a Shastra thing, then they're just going to the demigod because the Shastra says. But then they're only seeing up to the demigod level. They don't actually see the Supreme Lord, and these are all the Supreme Lord's officers. So again, still, it's uninformed. You know what I'm saying? But here is something that the temple president has given, that if you need a broom, you know, the temple commander's in charge of them. You don't go to the president and ask for a broom, because then he'll send you to the temple commander anyway. So this is a slight difference. Okay. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. If the demigods are part of the body of the Supreme Lord, why won't one get the same result by worshipping a demigod as by worshipping Krishna? Here a point may be raised that if the demigods are different parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, then the same end should be achieved by worshipping them. However, worshippers of the demigods are less intelligent because they don't know to what part of the body food must be supplied. Some of them are so foolish that they claim that there are many parts and many ways to supply food. This isn't very sanguine. Can anyone supply food to the body through the ears or eyes? They do not know that these demigods are different parts of the universal body of the Supreme Lord. And in their ignorance, they believe that each and every demigod is a separate god and a competitor to the Supreme Lord. So that means even you're going through the mechanics of the demigods, still the worship has to go to the Lord, Supreme Lord. Right? It still has to go by that method. So that's the point, is then there's no need to go through the demigod. Right? Does that make sense? Because the Lord giving his benediction, you approach him and he gives the benediction, he'll get his officers to fulfill it anyway. Like you go to the big man and say, I need this, and he'll get his people to get it done. You know what I'm saying? But it's very different. You have a relationship with the person, rather than you try to go to the small people. Because it still is, they have to go to the big guy. Right? Does that make sense? And now we've given all this respect and everything to the little guy, but now he's just going to go ask the big guy. Right? So the respect and all that is part of the relationship, has been offered to the wrong person. You know what I'm saying? Because he's not necessarily going to... He's not there to represent you. He's not your servant. You know what I'm saying? Well, I mean, take it like that. I've done the service, so he has to know. It's that, you know, you want to worship the demigod, that's your foolishness. Does that make sense? The results achieved by the demigod's benedictions are perishable, because within this material world, the planets, the demigods, and their worshippers are all perishable. Therefore, it is clearly stated in this verse that all results achieved by worshipping demigods are perishable. And therefore, such worship is performed by the less intelligent living entity. Because the pure devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service of the Supreme Lord achieves eternal blissful existence that is full of knowledge, his achievements and those of the common worshipper of the demigods are different. The Supreme Lord is unlimited. His favor is unlimited. His mercy is unlimited. Therefore, the mercy of the Supreme Lord upon his pure devotees is unlimited. So the demigod is working within the material sphere. So what benedictions he can give are also just material. Right? Does that make sense? So then you're going to have to take this material result that you were too embarrassed to ask the Lord for, and now you're going to have to ask him to accept it. Right? We're embarrassed that he should give it, but we're not embarrassed that he should accept it. Does that make sense? Mm. The point is he's giving it and he's accepting it. So, when it's done in connection with the Lord in devotional service, the result is eternal. It doesn't mean that the material medium of it will last eternally. Right? Because even if it did, what good is it for you? You know what I'm saying? If the material body, you leave the material body, there's no value for you specifically, that material item is still there. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, the soul is eternal. The results of the devotional service are eternal. That's what you get when you approach the Lord. But if you approach the demigods, what you get is material result, and the benefits are temporary. There is no eternal element to it. Because the eternal element is only there in connection with devotion, right? Even we see the impersonalists, then they may get a spiritual result, but it's still temporary. Because it's not. So only devotional service is eternal. Does that make sense? We have to make a difference between what's eternal and what is its situation in eternity. Does that make sense? One may be situated in eternity, but it doesn't mean you are going to be situated in eternity eternally. Does that make sense? That's the mistake of the Mayavadis. Right? It's also the mistake of the materialists. They think I will eternally be happy. Right? Like that. But their situation is temporary, so everything else is temporary. So then that's really less intelligent. Does that make sense? So here it says, the Lord is unlimited, His favor is unlimited, His mercy is unlimited. But you have to ask for it. Right? He's not going to get in the way of your independence. This is not, one should not mistake that this is because the Lord is dependent upon the living entities. Unless you act, He can't act. Right? Jaimini will present it that way. The demigods, we perform our activity, we should get the result. We don't do the yajna, they can't give the result because it's the rule that for this activity, you get this result. So then they turn it around that therefore the demigods are dependent upon us. Right? I did my karmakanda, yajna, then they have to give the result. But if I don't do it, they can't give the result. So it's all up to me. I'm the one that makes the first move. Right? But with the Lord, it's a matter of He's not going to get in the way of your independence. Because affection, if it's based on independence, then that has some meaning. You know what I'm saying? You go to the restaurant, and the waiter takes care of you properly, that he's being paid to do that. You know what I'm saying? But if you're at home and someone takes care of you, a friend takes care of you, they're not being paid. That gives more taste. Like that. So therefore, the Lord is only, since everything's His anyway, and He doesn't need to be paid, therefore He's only interested in, the real relationships. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
Very good. Okay. So lesson 27 is the last in the reasons. Okay. When God descends, fools consider Him an ordinary man. Right? So this is all the point is the Lord comes Himself to explain everything to the living entity. But the problem is the living entity has all these shortcomings. He doesn't recognize the Lord. He thinks that someone else other than the Lord can provide things. Right? All these different difficulties that he has. He thinks that the Lord descending is material. Right? Like that. And then it means that idea of surrendering to the Lord, one becomes fearful. Right? So Bhagavatam, that's one of the first things that's dealt with. Uttara surrendering to Krishna. right? And you can see Krishna takes care, so to remove that element of fearfulness, like that. So, does that make sense? Okay. So now here's the last of the reasons, is that the fools considered him ordinary. So there's a lot of verses on this one. 9:11. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. Okay. Comment on the idea that Krishna is a powerful human being. The personality of Godhead who conducts the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the complete cosmic manifestation cannot be a human being. Yet there are many foolish men who consider Krishna to be merely a powerful man and nothing more. Actually, he is the original supreme personality, as is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna. He is the supreme lord. Despite the, because the human being is not there before the creation, is there during the creation, is not there after the creation. But the Lord is there, because to create means you have to be there before creation. Right? And to be able to affect the destruction, you have to be there afterwards. Right? Especially since there's another creation then. Right? Does that make sense? So human being means that, it means the Lord has to be beyond. Because he's there before everything. And he's still there after. And he's there during. Right? We also don't, you know, say, okay, he's created it. He can create it, he can destroy it, you know, but he can't run it. Like that. You know, that's not very generous. Right? You know, the person is so intelligent, he could create this fabulous thing, but he doesn't know what to do with it, you know. Like that. And we're so intelligent, we do, right? We're
the ones that know. That's the point.
Yeah. Despite the transcendental qualities of Lord Krishna's body, its full bliss and knowledge, there are many so-called scholars and commentators of Bhagavad Gita who deride Krishna as an ordinary man, right? And the fun part is they're scholars and they're commentators. So if they're intelligent, why would they be commenting on something that's not of intellectual value, right? That they would consider as beneficial for others. So if he's an ordinary man, why would he be saying all this great stuff? Right? Does that make sense? You know. So that would mean that they think that the material energy itself, it gives its own benefits. Right? It's complete in itself, and that, you know, all one's necessities can be provided just from the energy itself. Problem is they don't understand that the energy comes from a source. Right? Otherwise, how will it be energy? Right? Something's only energy if there's a source of it and it's connected. As soon as it's not connected to the source, it's not anymore manifesting energy. The scholar may be born an extraordinary man due to his previous good work. But this conception of Sri Krishna is due to a poor fund of knowledge, right? Pointing out here is that they may be extraordinary, very special intelligence, very good qualities, piety, you know, so many things may be there. So that's there from a previous life. So they've done good work in the past. But unfortunately, their application to Krishna then doesn't have much benefit. That's due to a poor fund of knowledge. Means the poor fund of knowledge means the fund, you know, that of this knowledge of God that's there is not very replete. Yes.
Also, it's interesting to notice that they derive Krishna, but then from other humans, they make gods.
Yeah. And they glorify in that. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There can be no god, but then, you know, there's, what do you call it? Justin Bieber, right? You know, like that. So it's just they create. Yeah, it's true.
Sports stars are usually.
Yeah, sports gods. Stars, celebrities. Who was telling me the other day that one place it was a definition of a celebrity is someone who, you know, full time acts as a celebrity.
Famous for being famous.
Yeah, basically. Because it's materialistic. That's why we say they're envious. Because the point is, if they're not envious, then why couldn't God also be God? But it's kind of like the Mayavadis. Mm-hmm. They won't go to it. They'll say everything is God. Everything's the same, right? It's all one. Everything is God. And they'll say everybody is God, right? They'll call each other Narayana. So, but they won't go inside a temple to see the deity. Mm. Like that won't worship, offer any worship to the deity. But they'll, you know, another sannyasi, they'll give respect, they'll, you know, namo narayana, the whole thing. But not to the deity. So everything can be God except the deity. Right? So this is the so that's why we say envious. Is that underlying they're actually envious. Therefore, he is called Mudha, for only foolish persons consider Krishna to be an ordinary human being. So here's another aspect of Mudha, because generally we'll take Mudha, meaning that he just works hard. You know, he's a common laborer, you know, uneducated, uncultured. You know, that will be our, you know, you say archetypical kind of idea of a Mudha. But here we see that's being extended, that Mudha is a mentality where they consider Krishna to be ordinary. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's there. So they're working very hard for whatever is their situation, because even the person who's educated and cultured is working very hard, but for a purely mundane element. Mm-hmm. Right? So that aspect is there. So it's not necessarily that you have just, he's just a Mudha, and then just a Naradhama, mm-hmm. and just a Mayaya Pratigyana, and like this, is that you can have all these, you know, a nice mix. That. You know what I'm saying? You know, he's a Sura and a Sura, you know, like that, with, how you say, his intelligence has been stolen by illusion. He's therefore the lowest of mankind, and he has a donkey head with horns on it, like that, right? Because demons have horns, and he's a Mudha, right? So like that, I can get. The foolish consider Krishna an ordinary human being because they do not know the confidential activities of the Supreme Lord and his different energies. Right? So we can see is that what Prabhupada is pointing out is not the mundane, you know, the ordinary definition of less intelligent. Because he's already said, the scholar, he's using the term scholar. He's not saying so-called scholar, you know, or bogus scholar. He's saying he's a scholar, because by definition, scholar means someone who's well-educated and very expert in some branch of knowledge. Right? So they're a scholar, and he's born an extraordinary man. Due to previous good work. So he's already acknowledged all the things that the person is recognized for, but saying he's still a fool because he doesn't understand the Supreme Lord, who's the source of all this knowledge. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, just like the demigod worshiper is approaching and not understanding that the whole process is the Lord's arrangement. So they're also ignoring the Lord and the whole process of liberation. Is still sanctioned by the Lord. You want to get liberated, the Lord has to sanction it. You want a new car, the Lord has to sanction it. Like that.
So it's similar to the Kami, who's very pious because it gives good results, but doesn't get that it goes back to...
Yeah, doesn't get, so therefore his results are temporary. That's why his facility is temporary, his liberation is temporary. But for the devotees, they depend upon the Lord for everything. So then he's cultivating eternal situation, eternally, with, you know, good quality facilities.
Fringe benefits.
Yes. Thinking those, but it's not of this world, so that would mean it would be beyond the fringe.
That's true, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Beyond the fringe benefits.
So getting the fringe benefits, though, you're beyond.
Transfringe.
trans fringe. So you could be a transfringentalist. Transfringentalist.
I like it.
Transfringentalist.
Get a little car.
Yeah, good. So then they wouldn't know. They wouldn't quite know what it means, so then they probably think maybe you're a transgender dentist.
Yeah. And they'd leave you alone.
That's true. Okay, we'll move on now. Okay. The foolish consider Krishna an ordinary human being because they do not know the confidential activities of the Supreme Lord and his different energies. Right? So they don't know what's beyond, because if he has a form, we have a form, it's mundane. He has a form, it must be mundane. So they don't know about his activities beyond the mundane. Right? His qualities and activities. They do not know that Krishna's body is a symbol of complete knowledge and bliss. Right? Because our bodies are symbols of ignorance. That he is the proprietor of everything that be, and he can award liberation to anyone. So if he's the proprietor of everything, that means anything you want from the demigods, he can give. The liberation you want, that's also in his hand. Because they do not know that Krishna has so many transcendental qualifications, they deride him. Right? But, you know, as Prabhu mentions, that someone else they'll make into a god and say all good things about him, but God then they'll deride. Mm. Like that. But I guess unless you deride God, then someone else can't be God, you know, like that, because otherwise there'd be two gods, and that wouldn't be right. So then he's not God. Unless, so what is it? There was one, what was it? Guru Maharaj Chi? Mm-hmm. He was just like this kid. Like that, and his mother proclaimed he was God, and it had a big following, and this went on for years and years and years, and then I think he got out of hand or something, and his mother wasn't pleased with him, so then she proclaimed he's no longer God, but his other brother now is God. Like that. And so everyone should stop worshiping him as God and now start worshiping the other brother as God. Like that. So.
They went to court after that.
Oh, then they went to court. And what did the court decide about who's God? Okay, that's fun. Yeah, right. And then they have to work it out in court. So that means they went to... So does that mean their mother wasn't the highest authority anymore or anything like that? Yes. Yeah, so.
You'd think that God could settle it himself.
Yeah, whatever it is, yeah. But now the question is was it being covered in the Supreme Court?
Oh, yeah. You know,
so then at least then it has some, but it was just an ordinary court, and that would be inappropriate. Right?
God jailed for 6 months for
child divorce. Yeah, God. Oh, you're just saying. Yeah, that shows remorse. Yeah.
Says he's sorry.
Appeal. Mother.
Nor do they know that the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this material world is a manifestation of his internal energy. That's why he said it's a complete symbol of complete knowledge and bliss. Because he is eternity. He is existence. In other words, everything that is him. He is existence. So therefore, the form is knowledge and bliss. You know, that's the symbol of that. He's, of course, the other is already included, but you can see because of, right? It's a manifestation of his internal potency. So his internal potency is arranging that. Right? That he's appearing here. So he's not appearing within Maya. So they're thinking that someone's, you know, our appearance here is due to Maya. So therefore, God appears here, it must be due to Maya. But he's appearing here because of his internal potency. Right? His internal potency is arranging it. So he's not walking around in the material world. It may be he's walking around in his internal potency that is situated within the material sphere. Does that make sense? Because he never interacts with the material energy. That means, where he steps, he's stepping on the internal potency. You know, is that something? That's why we put a lotus there. Right? Because that's the internal potency. It's means Sri Bhuva Nila, means Nila is the lotus, the Sandini potency. Right? So that's the earth. When he steps, he's stepping on Sandini, not on, you know, ignorance. Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. He is the master of the material energy. As been explained in several places, Mama Maya Duratyaya. He claims that the material energy, although very powerful, is under his control. And whoever surrenders unto him can get out of the control of this material energy. So he's in control of it. How it works is his laws. He gives the sanction. So if you surrender to him, then everything will... then one can get out of the control of the material energy. If a soul surrendered to Krishna can get out of the influence of material energy, then how can the Supreme Lord, who conducts the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the whole cosmic creation, have a material body like us? Right? So if the soul can get out, then why would we consider, you know, and that's by God's grace, why would we consider that God is part of this? Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking that when he descends, he could just like we put on a chatter, he would just put on some matter and walk around, you know.
Could. But why? Because we complain about the matter we're in, so why would he, if he has a choice, why would he choose that?
Good point.
You know what I'm saying?
Touché.
Yeah. Is it touché because the first person, what you said was one che, and now they come back as touché, and so they defeated
you? That's the French guy.
Okay.
It means touch, right? Poked me. Touche? It's in sword fighting.
Yes, when jousting.
Exactly.
Part of jousting.
Yeah.
So when you touch the guy back.
When you touch the guy.
No, it's fencing.
You can't. You
like
can't.
In picket or.
No.
you can't attack until you acknowledge the Muslim. You have to be in a stance of India. So you accepted his argument, but then. Back
and then defeated him. Okay.
Shay, that's a dance move. So that's touche.
No, probably. That's two shays.
Yeah.
So this conception of Krishna is complete foolishness. Foolish persons, however, cannot conceive that the personality of Godhead, Krishna, appearing just like an ordinary man, can be the controller of all the atoms and of the gigantic manifestation of the universal form. The biggest and the minutest are beyond their conception, so they cannot imagine that a form like that of a human being can simultaneously control the infinite and the minute. Actually, although he is controlling the infinite and the finite, he is apart from all this manifestation. It is clearly stated concerning his yogam aishwaryam, his inconceivable transcendental energy, that he can control the finite and the infinite simultaneously, and that he can remain aloof from them. Although the foolish cannot imagine how Krishna, who appears just like a human being, can control the infinite and the finite, those who are pure devotees accept this. For they know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they completely surrender unto him and engage in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord. Right, so that means that you have the universal form, which is so great, and then at the same time you have the atom, which is so small. Right? Because he's mentioning about the commentators here. So then means the Shastra will describe the Lord as the universal form. Right? Same time, he's in the atom, between every atom. Right, these are all Shastric points. So they can understand, okay, like this, then the great, the unlimited, you know, the Brahman can do that. right? Because if Brahman is all-pervading and do, but then how can a form that, you know, appears to us to be limited in time and space, how can that be in control of both of these? So they don't understand his yoga aishwaryam, his inconceivable potency, right? That by that he's able to do, because he's beyond. He's functioning in the internal potency, while we're covered by the external. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
9.12. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Right? Because they're thinking they're going to become perfect and happy by their liberation, the fruit of activities, and the culture of knowledge. But it's all defeated because it's temporary. Which type of devotees cannot taste the fruit of devotional service? There are many devotees who assume themselves to be in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, but at heart do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, as the absolute truth. For them, the fruit of devotional service, going back to Godhead, will never be tasted. Similarly, though, those who are engaged in privative pious activities and who are ultimately hoping to be liberated from this material entanglement will never be successful either, because they deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, persons who mock Krishna are to be understood to be demoniac or atheistic. So they may take a position as a devotee. You go into many, you know, Hindu homes, and they have their altar, they have pictures of Krishna or Rama, or, you know, they don't have any problem worshipping Vishnu. But they're not actually devotees, because they don't accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality and all others are servants. You know, they're all gods. So they'll worship Vishnu, no problem. You're having a program, you're having kirtan, they'll be there, they'll be taking part, very enthusiastic. But then you could also, the next day, have a kirtan, you know, for Shiva and that. They'd be there, enthusiastic, and the next day for, you know, for Shakti, they'd be there, you know, like that, you know. So it's no problem, you know. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Maharaj, I mean, like, what we're talking about here is really the sincerity of somebody. And so how does, like, one maintain that sincerity to Krishna? So you have, like, good intentions in your daily sadhana.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously there's, you know, you might come across, like another anarta, let's say, for example, and then it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm doing all the programs, but yet, hang on a minute, like, we really have to be honest with ourselves and ask ourselves what's happening inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, how does one cultivate that sincerity and keep that sincerity?
Mm-hmm. Well, the main thing is that, as we see, it's by desire. So simply wanting it is the basic principle. And wanting it means that you have to show that you want it. It means you have to be making an endeavor. Right? Because otherwise you can say, no, I want to do this, but we're doing something else. You know, like that. So there has to be the desire for it and trying to take advantage of, you know, the opportunity to obtain it. Whether we're expert at our endeavor, that's another thing. But the desire is there to do that nicely. So this will be best cultivated in the association of devotees, because they have that mood. So by being around them, then we'll have. So we can say, no, but that means, you know, the great, the pure, you know, the one, you know, dropping out of the heavenly planets or wherever we want them to drop from. You know, but the point is that's why this is society. Because someone's a devotee because there's some sincerity. So, you know, wherever it's manifest, it's real. And wherever it's not manifest, that's the part that's unreal. And because something's unreal doesn't mean the whole thing's not real. Does that make sense? Right? So, by having a broader association, then they can inspire each other and that way make it more of substance. Or, at different times, different persons are having everything, you know, are sincere. Does that make sense? You know, there's somebody in the kirtan and they're fired up and they're involved, but some others on the corner over there, you know, doing something important, you know, on their telephone or something. You know, so the thing is it may not, so you take advantage of those who are absorbed in the kirtan, right? Does that make sense? You know, unless you just remember that you had some important thing to do, and then you go over to the side and also do something on your phone, you know, like that. You know? So in any case, it's association. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So in other words, here's now Prabhupada's giving this direction is that there means they're getting their fruitive results. They're getting their liberation, right? They're getting their good qualities. But if none of that will give them, you know, entrance into the spiritual world. Therefore, we could say it's, you know, not very useful. Right? Like here, they're defeated. Because it means they'll lose those things. Because you've done the work, you get the result. But then it'll be lost. So then you have to do the work again. So it's defeated. Right? Does that make sense? So it's like, you know, you go in, you sit down, you eat the meal, so you're victorious over hunger. Right? But then just give it a few hours, and then it's all lost.
Hunger is victorious over you.
Yeah. And so then again you have to go out, go to battle. You know? Yeah. So both is that whatever's material will be lost, but that's not actually the big problem. It means we'll look at that's the big, oh, because you're going to lose everything. That's not the big problem. Because everybody loses everything anyway, right? The big problem is you don't gain the transcendental situation. That's the problem. You know. So in other words, one takes up devotional service, appreciating that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, rather than just a Godhead, or just a God, right? It is a great offense, therefore, to consider Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, to be an ordinary man. Those who do so are certainly deluded, because they cannot understand the eternal form of Krishna. The Brihad Vishnu Smriti clearly states, one who considers the body of Krishna to be material should be driven out from all rituals and activities of the Shruti and the Smriti. And if one by chance sees his face, one should at once take bath in the Ganges to rid himself of infection. And that kind of taking bath, generally speaking, means with your clothes on. You know, because it means, you know, not only you become contaminated, your clothes and everything, so you take bath with all your clothes on. You know. That's the standard. So here we're saying that someone who doesn't, means this Brihad Vishnu Smriti, is making the point. Manu makes the point is if somebody doesn't acknowledge the authority of the scriptures, then they shouldn't be involved. You shouldn't involve yourself with them on any level of Shruti and Smriti, rituals, activities, relationships, anything the Shastras recommend, right? It means that the Shastra recommends that, you know, means appropriate family and persons, then one marries into those, you have relationships, you deal according to those relationships, or if not, they have a position in society, you deal with them accordingly, all that, right? Because that's what Shastra says is appropriate. Right, but they don't accept the authority of Shastra. So therefore, you shouldn't do any of those activities in connection with them. Does that make sense? Based on their position. Right? Means if you meet them, and so then Shastra says you're supposed to interact properly with people, that you're doing because that's your position. But it has nothing to do with theirs. Right? But relationships will not be taken further than that, because they themselves don't accept the authority of, you know, that defines how you should deal with them. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Right, so here it's taking it even farther, is that they don't accept Krishna, who is the author of the scriptures. Then they shouldn't even do any ritual and activity that is defined in the Veda. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The other one is you don't get involved. Mm-hmm. This one is going to point that they shouldn't even be involved. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So in other words, they should accept the transcendental position of the Lord. Then someone's qualified to deal with the scriptures and to deal with the various rituals that are there. So that's why when we say, no, all the scriptures, those are for the materialists. Actually, they're not. The scriptures are for the devotees.
Mm.
Like that. Technically, the non-devotees shouldn't even deal with the Vedic literatures. But if they don't, there won't be a favorable environment for the devotees. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense.
If the
materialists, if it's not a general principle of following the rules of the Vedic culture, there won't be an environment. There won't be as favorable an environment for the devotees. Like, just let's say, okay, in the 70s, then people would, in more general, though sentimentally, would be following Vedic culture. You know, so all the different, you could say, accoutrements of the Vedic culture were very easily available. All the varieties of cloth and chudders and ornaments and oils and everything like this, you know, gold, silver. It was all very easily available, all the different kinds of cooking, all the different kinds of, all this, does that make sense? It was very easily available because they were following the culture. Now as they're giving up the culture, they're giving up those things. It's very hard to find these things now.
So it means in the organization, the management, that those things have to, everybody has to follow the culture, but it's not that they have to understand, they don't have to explain everything, they just should surrender to following the culture.
Yes, but if it's explained, then there's the chance that then they will come up. The reason that, because it's not explained, that's why they're leaving it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? There's the illusion that I can get both. I can get all the benefits from what I like following from the Vedic, but at the same time as I can maintain that and get all the benefits that I see in a non-Vedic culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll get them both at once, but that doesn't work. You put one foot in one boat, one foot in another boat, then you're going to end up in the water. You'll be in neither boat. You know, that's the difficulty.
So the education has to be there, so people have the preliminaries.
The point is it's the education is there, so they're situated in the culture. By practicing the culture, you're supposed to associate with saintly persons. Those saintly persons are supposed to be devotees, right? And so then you'll get the proper association and see that your approach to the Vedic culture has simply been materialistic. It hasn't been actually what the purpose is for. So one will improve that quality. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Right? Does that make sense?
All the elements need to be, you know, renovated again and switched on.
People jeer at Krishna because they are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their destiny is certainly to take birth after birth in the species of atheistic and demoniac life. Perpetually their real knowledge will remain under delusion, and gradually they will regress to the darkest region of creation. Right? So the real knowledge will remain under delusion. So that means the soul is inherently, you know, in knowledge, but that will always remain covered because they're not accepting Krishna, who is the origin of that. Right? That's how one becomes Bahir Mukh. The living entity is situated on the transcendental, on the spiritual platform. There's a happiness there. So there has to be a source. If you're not the source of it, there must be one. Right? So inherently the jivas understand God is the source of that happiness. So if you want to increase that, then you have to turn and interact with the Supreme. Does that make sense? But if you don't acknowledge the position of the Supreme, then what does that leave you? Right? So then that means that's an illusion. So that will take you farther and farther away from the Lord. So that means one will get more and more, you know, the atheistic, demoniac life. And then that will slowly, it says gradually, they will regress to the darkest region of creation. So they'll just start going slowly, slowly, slowly. This is fun. But now if you take up devotional service, then it's gradually, but it will go the other way, but quite quickly. Does that make sense? Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So he's establishing the higher nature. Bhagavan is a higher nature. So yes, God is impersonal, localized, and personal. Right? But the personal is the higher, because it's the support of the other two. Right? God's higher than the creation because he's the support of the creation. Right? The internal potency is superior to the external and to the jivas because it's the source. Does that make sense? Yeah. So he's the source. So unintelligent don't know me perfectly. Right? Means they know him to some degree. So they understand the aspect of Brahman. But they don't understand that he's always a person. And this Brahman element is just an aspect. Yes.
Maharaj, what's the argument to establish that the personality of Krishna as a person is superior to the
personality as a person? So you can be a personality person, and not be a person.
Person.
So that means like your dog has a personality, but you're not a person.
And so
or you go into the living area or something, and you look around and all the different things, and it's well arranged. You say, "Wow, this has got personality." You mean like that kind of? Is that what you mean?
I don't know. I got distracted by the
comment. They should talk loud. should I tell them to stop doing that?
That's okay.
They're very uncultured.
Learn to focus more, you know.
No, you should learn to talk louder, then they won't make a comment. Then whether you have focus or not, then you won't be distracted. But that would still require that you focus on
talking louder,
yeah. So,
or get a bullhorn.
So,
but then you have to focus on bringing it. Yeah.
What's the argument that establishes the personality of Godhead is higher than the impersonal aspect?
That the personality is higher than the impersonal. Because the impersonal is generic, while the personal is specific. Right? And all our endeavors for anything is to manifest the specifics of the general. Right? Means there's economy, there's money, there's wealth. So is that good enough? Or do you want it to, you know, do you want to, you know, be involved with some of it? Right? And that you have it, is that enough? No, it has to be involved with other aspects. You have money, if you don't spend it, you don't have any facility. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that the personal is what one's endeavoring for. That's the inherent. Everybody's doing that. You know? Well, I could say the Mayavadis aren't, but why do they all get together? Why do they, you know what I'm saying? Why is it they're all the Mayavadis are all in one place? Right? They're all sitting in Varanasi, they're all sitting in Rishikesh or Hardwar. They're not just spread all over, you know, just permeating, you know, the Brahman. No, they all group together. You know what I'm saying? So the personal is the natural of the tendency of the living entity. Now one may say, yes, well that's the mundane and we're talking about the spiritual. But the soul is the spiritual. The body is the mundane. The bodies don't mind one's here and one's over there. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know. Yeah?
But they say man is a social animal.
Man is a social animal, but why... But where does the social... What is the man? The body You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You go to a morgue, you know, everybody's got their spot, but it's not that you come back in the morning and open one of the drawers and there's, you know, a few of them in there having a party or something like that. You know, when you open the door, they give you a dirty look. Oh, sorry. You know, like that. You know, it doesn't happen. Does that make sense? You know. Yes.
Because we're steeped in impersonalism, the ideas are very unique and rare for us to grasp.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just because we take it for granted, you know, and so we just we act on a platform that is perfectly fine, but it's not. So that's the difficulty: is the lack of understanding God as a person, and lack of understanding His authority, supreme authority. That's what creates all the difficulties, you know? That's what creates the difficulties, you know? But all the difficulties are coming, and because of the atheistic, demoniac nature, we think, oh, I just have to have a better plan, right? I didn't quite work something out. I didn't take into consideration that, you know, I bought on the, you know, on the, what do you call it? You know, my apartment at this particular place, and then, you know, but, you know, when the tsunami came, it wasn't quite high enough, so I could get in a, you know, another place farther back and a little higher, right? Because I wanted to see the beach, so the best place is not on the beach, but it's a few kilometers back from the 50th floor, right? You know, does that make sense? So it's just, you know, my plan wasn't quite so good. Does that make sense? But the intelligent person understands the material world is what it is. Doesn't mean that you don't work with it, but you're working with it because that's your duties. For the materialist, he's not doing it because it's his duties. He's doing it because, you know, he wants to get the results. That's all. Now, those who are intelligent, they see that there's patterns of social dealing. So they know you have to do it like this. So you could say on one level, well, they're dutiful. But technically they're not actually dutiful. They're only doing it because they know it'll get that result, which is for themselves anyway. Right? Does that make sense? But with them there's a concept of piety, so you would be able to explain the elements of proper performance of one's duties. And that everybody has specific duties. They would understand that because they're more in touch with the laws. But they're not in touch, more in touch with the lawmaker. As they get bigger, they get more... like saying, when one of the leaves dries on the tree, it just, you know, falls off. And when they were small, you wouldn't notice it. But as they get bigger... I guess it was just bonding or something. Something tall and thin is making noise, so it should make some noise. Okay, in the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the personality of Godhead cannot be understood simply by study of the Vedanta literature. Only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord can the personality of the Supreme be known. Therefore, in this verse, it is clearly stated that not only are the worshippers of the demigods less intelligent, but those non-devotees who are engaged in Vedanta and speculation on Vedic literature, without any tinge of true Krishna consciousness, are also less intelligent. And for them, it is not possible to understand God's personal nature. Right, so just as for the activities of karma one goes to the demigods for, Krishna's giving the results, right? It's also for the study of knowledge, right, that he's giving the result. So in other words, anything that's being attempted by the living entity on karma, jnana, yoga, the results are being given by the Lord, not someone else. So when the less intelligent will think that it's not happening that way, or you can function separately from that. So he's saying not only are the others less intelligent, because the jnanis will go, if you're worshipping the demigods, they're less intelligent. No, they're also less intelligent. You know, because it's just the other side of the same materialistic concept. Right? And it says here, without any tinge of true Krishna consciousness. They may be Krishna conscious, but it's not true. Like the commentator on Gita is Krishna conscious, but he's not truly Krishna conscious, because he doesn't accept Krishna as a person. Right? So only those who accept Krishna as a person are actually, and even then, even they accept him as a person. Like Kamsa, I'm sure, accepted that Krishna was a person. Right? He didn't have any problem, because he wasn't afraid of his Brahmanness. You know, ooh, he's going to come and, you know, overwhelm me and, you know, the Brahman, like that. No, he's worried he's going to come and punch him in the head, right? So, but he's not true Krishna consciousness means you're conscious of God as a person and as favorable. In other sense. So that means it has to be free from karma and guilt. So karma that you think something of material facility is what's going to make you happy, or knowledge is going to make you happy. No, it's Krishna's going to make you happy. And you can use, depending upon your nature and the situation, the facilities or knowledge or both to serve Krishna. So whatever's appropriate. Right? So it's not possible to understand God's personal nature, because only by his grace you can get that. Right? It's not a matter of just knowledge, because they read it, but they don't believe it. Right? Because if it's there, you read it, and if we're just dealing with just intelligence, you'd accept it. Right? Like if I take out, you know, a certain amount of rocks, and I put them here, you know, and then we count them, and then we go, there's four rocks. So is there something to doubt? No, because it's just a fact. Right? So the Shastras are explaining the facts. Right? God is a person. But then they read that and go, no, that can't be true. Right? Like just like if I say, okay, you know, it says, no, what about those rocks? You know, we really need, you know, all these rocks. And then you say, yeah, I'll leave the rocks there. And then you come and there's only two rocks. It's kind of like, you know, then you don't believe it. I don't believe this. He only left two rocks. You know, like that. I told him a million times. You know what? You understand? So what's here? It's a fact. There's two rocks there. That's it. Deal with it, right? No, but he can't deal with it. Why? Because the mind. So the impersonalist can't deal with that God's a person, not because of their intelligence. They have plenty of that. No, because of their mind. So that's the point, is intelligence alone will not give you, you know, understanding of God consciousness. It's only by Krishna's grace. Because being beyond the intelligence, being beyond everything, then it's not going to work just by our endeavor. Our endeavor and Krishna being pleased with that. Right? And, but Krishna tells you how he'll be pleased with it. It's not that, you know, you have to figure it out. Right? It's not one of those. Does that make sense?
Ours, and then different people's minds, then whenever they hear that God's a person, like that, then different people's minds have a different reaction, like, oh no, if God's a person, then I can't be God, or,
yeah,
you know, like that, so on and so on, it's different.
If God's a person, yeah, or if you look at it, or you could even inverse the Mayavad principle. If God's a person and that's spiritual, then being material means you're not a person. So I'm not actually a person.
That's actually a materialistic point of view. You're just chemicals and electricity in the body. So
then what they should be trying to do is get some kind of some kind of way to be able to tune in to what, you know, like on your shelf, there's so many chemicals, but, you know, something to put a pair of headphones there with a very powerful, you know, way of that, and, you know, hear what's the actual thinking of these chemicals, because they may be, you know, they're not distracted by all the other things in the lab and all that. They can just sit there and purely think. So they may be able to come up with some amazing you know, insight into, you know, the creation and, you know, the origin of the universe and existence in general, like this, right?
Yeah.
But we're not taking advantage because we're a pile of chemicals, but, you know, we're doing so many things and get distracted, but they don't have any distraction. What else is this? Well, they just sit there all day, you know, like that. You know, they pile of urea out in the backyard that's been sitting there, you know, they've been harassing you about for so long. You know, to do something about, you know, it may be, you know, coming up with great, amazing, you know, philosophical points like that, but just we're not appreciating it. It's just sitting out there growing weeds.
My cousin is a chemist, I can ask.
Yeah, so it's like that, you know. And then if after 5 years you see that, you know, that's a new cutting edge, you know, cutting edge, what do you call it, scientific theory, then you'll know where what happened, you know.
All the chemicals in the body, they cost like less than $10.
Oh, we're up to $10 now. Well, that's good. It used to be, I forget what it was before. It wasn't much. It was down in the cents. Okay. Remember?
It was 96 cents.
Yeah, something like that. You know, so it's so inflation. We're up to $10 now. Great.
I didn't remember the numbers.
Huh?
Copper's more expensive.
Copper's more expensive. Oh, okay. Copper's gone up. Silver's also gone up. Yeah. So if inflation is good, you have more self-worth. You know, you can look on the things and go, they calculate it. Wow, copper is up, silver is up. Oh, even the zinc. Wow. That means today I'm worth $11 and 17 cents. You know, you could go out with it, you know. But the, you know, proud, you know, things like that. Well, what's with you today? You know, like that. Says, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm up, you know, how you say, 23 cents in value. You know?
Look at the bathroom scale and you've gained a pound. It's like,
oh, yeah, that's another, yeah. See, like that. So that means those guys from Guam, like that, they're really worth a lot. You know, the Samoans, you know, over there.
And the bigger the body, then...
Yeah, the more the value.
How did he get there?
I have no idea.
Small
I think it's got to do
steps.
With the problem before of the focus.
It was different philosophies because it comes up because of not understanding Krishna as a person.
Yes. Yes. So basically, it's always going to fit into karma and jnana. It's just a matter of what's the detail of karma and jnana. Mm-hmm. You know, how they approach it. But it's always going to be these two. That's why they're always, the Prabhupada dealt with the one, then deals with the other. Like that. Persons who are under the impression that the absolute truth is impersonal are described as abuddhaya, which means those who do not know the ultimate feature of the absolute truth. And so it means they're less intelligent. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate feature. So they only know part. So the impersonal element, we don't have a problem with the personal element. We have a problem with the impersonal element, meaning that that's it. Mm. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like someone invites you over for a dinner, right? You know, and then they serve an appetizer. And then that's it. And it's kind of like you're going to say, you know, what happened to the meal? So it's, and they say, that is the meal. You know, then you understand they are uninformed. Right? They don't have enough, you know, that's a poor fund of knowledge. They think that's all there is.
Poor fund of prasad.
Yes. So they don't know the ultimate feature. So they don't understand the full, that there's the Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So they only know Brahman, or Brahman and Paramatma. Right? And then those who don't even know that are less intelligent again. Right? The materialists who just only know the material energy, then they're even less intelligent. Right? It's a feature of Brahman. Right? In other words, everything's manifested because of Brahman. So, but they don't even know that it's Brahman, so they're even less intelligent. You know what I'm saying? It's one to say, well, that's a feature outside the Lord. No, it isn't. It's Brahman. That's why I said it's Brahman, but it's not superior. Yes.
The only problem I'm having about all this is the fact that, like, here we have, you know, only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord can the personality of the Supreme be known. I mean, the fact is, the only reason we're at the level of realization that we're at is because of Krishna's mercy.
Right.
And so, like, you know, when I'm out doing book distribution and I meet an atheist, you know, one of the things I say is, well, the reason why you're coming up with, you know, these ideas why God doesn't exist is because God has given you the intelligence to see that he doesn't exist. Now, it is because of their desire.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything's by Krishna, whether
but
you know or don't know him.
Yeah, of course. But it's still according to your free will. You want to not know him, then Krishna will arrange so you won't know him. You want to know him, he'll arrange so you can know him. But it's our own desire. So the atheist is in that position because that's the position they're interested in. Because they can say, why is an atheist? Well, you know, I was very religious and then, you know, an accident happened and, you know, there was a car crash and my mom and my wife and my children all died, so there's no God. But that happens to other people too, and they become more religious. So it's not that that situation made it happen.
So, well, okay. So actually what we really are dealing with is people's fundamental desire.
Yeah.
That they don't really want to acknowledge that there's a supreme. So it doesn't really have to do with what you learn in scholarly or whatever, but I don't know, people say, you know, the less intelligent, the less intelligent. I keep thinking, well, but it's due to Krishna that they're not allowed to know.
Yeah, but they think they're very intelligent. I mean, it's just like someone who's very proud, what's the comment you make?
Big head.
Yeah, you know, it means you comment on the quality being manifest. Someone's uncultured, you comment on his being uncultured. You don't want to comment on his intelligence. Mm-hmm. Right? The person who considers himself a big scholar, you comment on his intelligence.
So like if we go to some Indian home and he has all the different demigods, instead of dealing with his intellectual level, actually we need to go to his desire, his basic desire. And the reason why he doesn't know is because
he doesn't want to, and he thinks that through fruit of activity he'll be happy, that there's actually happiness in the world. So that's why then he'll be worshiping demigods, so that he gets the facility, and then with that facility he and his family will be happy,
which is true. I mean, you know, if you want to deal with simply the material realm, you know, some people, they like making their position here better.
Right.
And so the demigods is whom you go to, you know.
Yes, but still it's less intelligent because the Lord is the one who actually sanctions. So if you wanted all that, you go to the Lord.
But then you go... Vaishnava, and then actually what happens is you learn to not really pay attention to your material situation.
Right. But there is some material situation. So the point is that arranged by the Lord or is that arranged by us?
By the Lord.
Yeah, but the point is you're making the endeavor. So who's allowing you to be successful in that endeavor? The Lord. So are we recognizing that? You know what I'm saying? So the devotee is thinking,
but recognizing because of Krishna's mercy. He's allowing us to recognize.
He's allowing you to recognize, but only if you want to recognize. So you can't leave it that it's all happening just because when Krishna wants, then it becomes whimsical on his part. The point is you want to know, you can know. You don't want to know, you don't know. So to know, because we say no is knowledge, so therefore that's more intelligent, and to not know is less intelligent. So it's just, in other words, the how you say, the fruitive worker is less intelligent, but he's less intelligent of intelligent. He's less less intelligent. No, actually, he's more or less intelligent than the impersonalist, who's also less intelligent, but he's more intelligent than the the gross materialist, who is more or less intelligent.
Yeah, because he has separated himself from trying to enjoy this temporary.
Yeah, so it's progressive in that it's the situation is better for understanding the nature of things, but if he doesn't use it that way, then on one level he's just, there's no difference. He's just as unfortunate. Because if the person, you know, doesn't know anything, and, you know, he just sits down there at the fish market and moves the crates around, he doesn't know anything, no one's going to blame him. But if he's at the university sitting in the chair, then if he doesn't know anything, then that's even, that's a little more stupid. You know what I'm saying? So that's the position, is that, and then ultimately, because personalism is the real foundation, then the impersonalist is even in a worse situation than the fruitive worker. No, it means just even the situation, like it said, between materialists. You have two materialists. It means, in other words, if you can't avoid being with the materialist, if it comes down to being with a karmi or a jnani, pick the karmi. Right? The mayavadi will be worse to be around. Because the karmi doesn't really have a philosophy.
Well,
he's just an enjoyer.
When we say jnani, are we using that synonymous with mayavadi?
Is there something else?
Well, I thought Yanni just meant someone who wants to study. I guess I was equating it with kind of like guru yoga a little bit.
But that's another application. Just like, let's say, the weather now is cool, right? But then we go and somebody tells us about some new cool app for his phone. So is it the same cool? You know, when you put that app on your phone, then you'll start seeing, you know, steam coming out of the, you know, different, you know, because it's, you know, and then it's really cold. So, you know, you should only use that app in the summertime, right? You know, like that, because otherwise it becomes so, by temperature, cool.
I just saw you using, you know, the same word, two different.
Yeah, because it's two different meanings.
Uh-huh.
The devotee, as jnani, means someone who wants to know the Lord as a person. But the generic term of jnani means someone who identifies with the academic field. It is their identity, you know. And so by studying the scriptures, they consider themselves very intelligent, and generally speaking, therefore, that's their claim to fame, so they consider themselves superior based on that principle. Does that make sense?
You were saying, you know, if you have a choice between karmi and jnani, choose the karmi because the jnani is more.
Because we said of materialists, you pick the karmi, not the jnani.
Of materialism.
Yeah. Because otherwise, if you're saying that, you know, you pick, because where would the jnani be, where would the materialistic intellectual be represented in that statement? You know what I'm saying? If the jnani is the devotee, then where would the intellectual be represented in, if we just say, you know, the karmi?
But it sounds like in that situation you would want to choose the jnani.
No, but he's imbued with Mayavad philosophy.
So when we say jnani, it's automatically...
It means you have to know the context. If we say materialist and then the next word we say is jnani, then we know that means that materialist which is absorbed in the path of knowledge. And then if we say materialist and then we say karmi, then that means the person absorbed in the path of fruitive work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when we're using that, then we don't apply the jnani, meaning the devotee who's interested in, like that. Does that make sense? Because you're looking at it, that of the devotee who is, you know, arta, artarti, and jigyasu, then pick the jnani. Right? But, according to what we said there, the jigyasu is very intelligent, academically. The jnani may not be. You know what I'm saying? The jigyasu, he's the one that, you know, is an academic and thinks he's very intelligent. So he's inquisitive about, you know, the Lord. It sounds interesting, intrigues his intelligence. You know, so therefore he wants to, you know, check it out. And then after playing with it for some time, he may see that there's some validity here. So he takes it up and then becomes a jnani. Or he may be satisfied and then moves on. Does that make sense? Oh, okay. Just means is that knowledge means to know the Lord. It's not based on academic ability. Right? So here when we say jnani means one who's in knowledge, means knowledge of the Lord. That when we're using the term scholars and stuff like that, we're indicating, you know, intellectual, you know, ability. Does that make sense? So that's why. Then there's only two classes here. There's the fruitive worker, and the intellectual. Right. Those are the two broad categories. Yes. So that's what we're dealing with here. So this whole run of verses, the unintelligent men, it's all being directed at someone who is trying to get fruit of results and someone who's trying to get intellectual results or trying to, you know, bring themselves to the Brahman platform. Both of them are unintelligent because they don't have enough information about the Supreme Lord. Okay.
Yeah. Maharaj, you mentioned that not having information about the Lord is due to lack of our desire to know it. But is it possible that it's just due to lack of luck?
Lack of luck.
Come across that.
But what is luck? What is luck?
It feels sometimes almost just random.
Random, no. Because then we're saying karma is random. No. The one person is lucky because he's performed the pious activity to get that result. And the other person didn't perform the pious activity, so he doesn't get the result. That's all. And then the situations they're in are just according to that result. The one person dealt with money nicely, he had a care for it, so he's born into a family that either has money or there was some glitch there as he deals very nicely. But, you know, there was some other element there. So he's born into a poor family, but very quickly they come into money or some way like that. So that we would say, well, that's luck. But it's not luck. It's that he's performed the activity. Now what he does with that facility now, that will define his future.
So due to pious activity, we come across the knowledge of the Lord?
No. No. Because there's, it means you have to be able to discern between these two, the material and the spiritual. It's you had a desire to do a proper activity, therefore you got the result. So if that's material, then you perform the material activity, you got the material result. But if you desire spiritual, then that facility will be made. The point is to have faith in that doing the material activity will give you happiness. You know, it's like that. You know, the person's just, you know, finished high school and this and that and doesn't see much happening in his area and all that, and so he decides he's just going to go out traveling. You know, they say, okay, where are you going? They have no plan. They just take their backpack and go out and stick out their thumb on the road. So where did that faith come from that by traveling that they would go, they'd be safe, they'd be happy, and everything like that?
Trust in the Lord in some level.
The Lord has given that faith, but they've desired it.
Right.
Right? And they have the karma to get it. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now, on the soul, because the soul by nature is spiritual, it's not a matter of requiring some previous karma to get it. It's inherent in the soul.
So when the soul desires, it's manifest?
It's, yes.
So even if we're not sure about it?
If you're not sure, then you get something there.
It seems to me it's not just purely conscious desire, it comes from a deeper.
Consciousness is about as deep as you get.
Because I wasn't conscious that I want to know Krishna, but I'm here and I'm getting
started. Yeah, but if you think back, at one point did you just kind of want to know what's going on? Or
Yeah.
So then that's where it starts. Because you don't know who God is, so you can't say, you know, you're just there and, wow, I really want to know Krishna and God, you know, and intimate relationships with his devotees and that loving exchange and all that, but I know nothing about it, and you know, and how I even know that I don't know about it. No, it's just, you want to know, so therefore Krishna sends the devotees. Now, what you do with that, you take it up, nice. You don't take it up, then whatever it is you want to do, then you fade back into that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Do you light on academic scholars and jnanis?
Academic. Can I put some light on academic scholars and jnanis?
Distinction between Ajahn or in the terms of Vedic.
Academic scholar is in English, jnani is in Sanskrit. Does that make sense? Jnan means knowledge, jnani means one who, you know, deals with knowledge. It's like you have a bike and you have a bikey. You know, it's like that. That's what they deal with. You know what I'm saying? You know, the computer guy you call a techie, right? You know, so it's just the way it works.
So, they also study Bhagavad Gita. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has himself with God, and he's a person, and those non-devotees cannot understand him. So, they also study, but they do not understand. They cannot come to the point of serving the Lord.
I'm kind of getting the idea that we've fallen into the situation where Prabhupada says that the person has explained Ramayana, the story of Ramayana, and then afterwards somebody raises their hand and says, can you explain, you know, whose brother Sita is? Sita is the brother of who? You know what I'm saying? Isn't that what we've just been doing for the whole last hour and a half, explaining what's the jnani and what's the karmi? And you're not. Jnani is the one who, he studies the scriptures and he knows the Sanskrit words, but he doesn't understand the import of them. That when God says that he's the supreme, that means he's supreme as a person. They think it simply means supreme as Brahman. So the form that's there is not actually the supreme manifestation. It's just a manifestation for convenience so that he can talk. Because Brahman doesn't seem to talk so much. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's what that's the mistake they're making, is they can't see that God is a person. But that's only by the association of devotees, because this whole section is defining that it's only when the Lord comes and gives knowledge that here, you know, the Adhikarana 4, God himself comes or sends his confidential servants to reclaim these forgetful living entities. The forgetful living entities can know Godhead only if he explains himself or he's explained by his confidential servants. So the reason for that is that the living entities, as karmis or jnanis, they're so absorbed that they can't appreciate God's position. Right? So that's why unless God explains it, they won't know. Does that make sense? Okay. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that supreme realization begins from the impersonal Brahman and then rises to the localized supersoul. But the ultimate word in the absolute truth is the personality of Godhead. Right? So it begins with from the impersonal Brahman. Right? Here. Supreme realization. You may get smaller realizations, like you just realize that if you leave, you know, your cough drop sitting on the windowsill, then the sun melts it and it makes a mess there and it's really hard to get off. In fact, it removes the paint. And then when it moves the paint, then somebody notices and you get in trouble. Right? So you come to that deep realization. But it's not the supreme realization. That's Brahman. Right? But then that rises to localized and it comes to the ultimate word. Does that make sense? Modern impersonalists are still less intelligent, for they do not even follow their great predecessor, Shankaracharya, who has specifically stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right. Because Shankaracharya, there's one book that he wrote, it's all about Radha and Krishna. I can't remember the name of it, but it's quite long, it's not so short. Like some of his other works are short. This one's quite long, it's like 90 verses or something. It's quite big. And it's all explaining about the supreme position of Radha and Krishna and everything like that. And if you ask the Shankarites about the book, they won't deny he wrote it, because it's so well known that he wrote this book. But they have absolutely no idea of why he wrote it. You know, why would he write that? So they're kind of bewildered. It's funny because I remember once asking one Mayavadi about, because I was trying to find the book. He's saying, yeah. He just couldn't conceive why he would write it. So that's what he's saying. The modern impersonalists are still less intelligent. Now we're talking here, when we're talking less intelligent, we're talking about Jaimini, you know, and, you know, other great personalities like this that are well studied in the Vedic literatures and have come to the, you know, their conclusion is by worship the demigods and through Karmakanda or through, you know, the yoga system or through, you know, Nyaya or, you know, Vedanta, then you'll know God. That's why he goes through and mentions these, because these are key things. He mentions Vedanta, he's mentioned the karma like this. Because if you have Jaimini, you can defeat any of the other four lower systems. Vedanta will defeat Jaimini. So if you deal with Jaimini and Vedanta, you know, Karma Mimamsa means Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa, then you've covered actually all the philosophies. So there's details within. And so here saying the modern impersonalists are still less intelligent than this, because they don't even accept, you know, what Shankaracharya has established. You know, and also, you know, Bhajan Govinda, you know, he's that was his last instruction, is worship Govinda, right? And so they take, well, Govinda was the spiritual master, so they mean worship his spiritual master. No, he meant Govinda. You know,
must be tough sometimes. Must be tough sometimes being Mayavadi, getting the ends to meet each other and stuff like that.
Oh, it's like any materialistic philosophy. It always has a problem. That's why you get so many branches of it.
Yeah.
Because somebody can't make this meet, but they get this to meet. Mm-hmm. So then that's a new philosophy, mm-hmm. you know, like that. Because these guys don't accept how you put that together. You know, so it's like that. Modern impersonalists are still less intelligent, for they do not even follow their great predecessor, Shankaracharya, who has specifically stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Impersonalists, therefore, not knowing the Supreme Truth, think Krishna to be only the son of Devaki and Vasudeva, or a prince or a powerful living entity. This is also condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 9:11. Abhijananti mam buddha manushim tavamashritam. Only the fools regard me as an ordinary person. Right, so now we've come back around in that circle. Right, so the supreme truth means there's supreme. It means when you're dealing with, but there's always what's on the absolute end, you know, the ultimate position. So that's Krishna as a person. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or his form, quality, or name, simply by mental speculation or by discussing Vedic literature. One must understand him by devotional service, right? So therefore, mental speculation means you're getting into the very intellectual aspects you know, in the way of Vedanta, of that, or discussing Vedic literature. It means also mental speculation can include any kind of intellectual endeavor like that. Discussing the Vedic literature, so even you're discussing the Vedic literature, if you're not discussing it in connection with Krishna, it still won't get you any benefit in the way of God consciousness. One must understand him by devotional service. When one is fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, beginning by chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then only can one understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Non-devotee impersonalists think that Krishna has a body made of this material nature, and that all his activities, his form, and everything are Maya. These impersonalists are known as Mayavadis. They do not know the ultimate truth. Right? So in other words, if they accept that Krishna's form is Brahman, but they don't understand the personality aspect of Brahman, then they're a Brahmavadi. But if they in any way think that Krishna's form is in any kind of illusion, whether it's a better quality of illusion, he's incarnation, the mode of goodness, or anything like that, you know, even if it's something considered, you know, nicer like that, then that means you consider it Maya. So that's therefore the term Mayavadi. So Mayavadi, though, is, you know, specific to that particular group of followers of Shankara, it's still very broadly applied. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise you say, God has a form. You know, he's a person, he's the supreme person, and this and that. You know, so then what does he look like? Oh, he has no form. Why not? Because form is material. So they said he has a form, and then he's not, so he's a Mayavadi. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, then what's on the roof there? You know what I'm saying? There's one guy sticking out his finger, and there's another guy sticking out his finger. Right? You know, so what's going on there? So if God has no form, then why is there a hand there and a body there? Why not just there's an effulgence there and Adam sticking out his finger? You know.
Mayavadis, they also follow scripture or read scripture based there.
Means. The generic term that we're presenting here is that they means generally speaking they will. Otherwise, why are they talking about God? But whether they study the Vedic literature is another thing. But when we specifically are talking about, you know, how you say, when we generally use the term Mayavada, we mean those who study the Vedanta, the Vedic literature. They follow Vedic culture. They use all the Vedic this and that. And so most of the stuff we can talk, they have no problem with. Like you can bring a Mayavadi here in the Gurukul and say, you know, we study scripture here and this and that. They'll look around and they'll walk off and say, this place is great. Mm. Right? Mm. Like that. But the problem is though they know the scripture, though they're following the culture, though they know Vedanta, though they're very intelligent, but still, ultimately, they're less intelligent because they can't understand the Supreme Person as a person. Does that make sense? I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. Right? Because infallible means beyond the modes. Right? Fallible means you come under the control of the modes of nature. Infallible means you're not under the control of the modes of nature. So the jiva is fallible, but the Lord is infallible. It may be argued that Saint Krishna was visible to everyone when he was present on this earth. How can it be said that he was not manifest to everyone? But actually, he was not manifest to everyone. When Krishna was present, there were only a few people who could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because otherwise, they saw with their senses, but still they can't understand who he is. In the assembly of Kurus, when Shishupal spoke against Krishna's being elected president of the assembly, Bhishma supported him and proclaimed him to be the supreme god. Similarly, the Pandavas and a few others knew that he was the supreme, but not everyone. He was not revealed to the non-devotees and the common man. Duryodhana thought that they would be able to, when Krishna came as a envoy for the Pandavas, he thought that we'll just, you know, lock him up. So they created this special seat that when he would sit on it, then you pull a lever and it would just go down into the earth. And then they close it off and then problem solved. Right? So that means he didn't know who Krishna was, though he would get quite a bit of association, Duryodhana. You know? It wasn't that it wasn't around and Krishna wasn't around, because when he comes to the palace, you have to deal with everybody that's there. But he didn't understand that. You know? But then he kind of thought something was not right with his perception when then, you know, the palace started shaking and the floor is breaking and this monster peacock feather started poking its way up through the floor. And then, you know, and then at one point then Krishna came out in this monster universal form manifested. You know, then he kind of got disheartened and thought, okay, we'll give up this endeavor, we're not going to be successful. Like that. But of course, you know, Shakuni reconvinced him and gave him his spirit that, no, don't give up. You have a good cause.
Now, it means that almost everyone, when Krishna was on the earth, were like tendency to impersonalism.
Impersonalism or just materialist? He says, they're the foolish and unintelligent. So we can mean here is ultimately is that foolish means is that God isn't the one ultimately that's arranging everything, and the unintelligent here is the one who thinks that God doesn't have a form and everything. It means they're both interchangeable. But you know, you may have somebody who accepts God's a person, but he goes to other people for things like that. So that's foolish, right? But here they're unintelligent. So it's, you know, so I'm saying, you have both, like that. You have both. You know, so many common people would see, but, you know, they think he's something special, but they wouldn't know how special, though they wouldn't know he's actually the Supreme Lord. You know, because it's just like this. You see somebody who has good bodily features, everyone notices and thinks, you know, generally positively. So no one's going to look better than Krishna. You know, so at least if nothing else, they thought, you know, he looked good at least.
And he has also a very big family.
He has a big family. Yeah. 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 160,000 kids. You know, not bad.
So at least I assume that all his family members were recognized in.
Means they, at some degree, it's said that the Yadus basically understood him as Paramatma, because they're basically all demigods, so they know him as the superstar. You know, because when they worship the Lord, they go to Brahma, and then they all go and sit on the bank of the Kiradak ocean, and then, you know, worship. Kiradaksha Vishnu. So then in their mind, he's Kiradaksha Vishnu. Because he Kiradaksha Vishnu told them all to come and make their appearance. Right? So in their mind, he's Kiradaksha Vishnu. So at least they understand as the Supreme Lord. So that means that's why their suras are counted as devotees. But still, very few, you know, of those who understood he was God, very few understood him as the Supreme Personality, as Krishna. Is that? Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, he was not revealed to the. Okay. Therefore, he was not revealed to the non-devotees and the common man. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that, but for his pure devotees, all men consider him to be like themselves. He was manifest only to his devotees as the reservoir of all pleasure. But to others, to an unintelligent non-devotees, he was covered by his internal potency. Right. So the except for the pure, they considered to be like themselves. So whatever they were like, then they would notice those qualities. You know, they're powerful, so they would see Krishna as powerful. They're intelligent, they see Krishna as intelligent. They're beautiful, they see Krishna as beautiful. So they would just notice in that way. They wouldn't notice it as he's the Supreme Lord. So he sees all these words here, non-devotees and the common man. So then in here you could say the non-devotees would be the unintelligent and the common man would be the foolish. You know, but at the same time as then, to wrap it all up, he says, but to others, to unintelligent non-devotees, right, he puts it all together into one. In other words, all the materialists, you know, then he was covered by his internal potency. Okay, so then Monday we'll start with, or no, actually, we have the next class. We'll continue with 28, which will then bring us into the examples. The further, oh, I see, into the Upanaya.
Okay, just a question. But since Krishna, when he came, not so many person recognize him as a pure devotee.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say that it is by the mercy of the pure devotee, like the acharya, who want to increase the number of people who can recognize Krishna as a supreme person?
Mm-hmm. Yes, because God reciprocates with you as you surrender. You don't surrender, then how does he reciprocate? By making it you're comfortable in not surrendering.
Yes, but can you say that the desire of the pure devotee,
yeah,
if he's there, means Krishna.
Yeah, well, the pure devotee doesn't care about whether you are interested or not.
Yes.
That's the difference.
Yes.
That's why the devotees will preach. Krishna won't preach. Means was Krishna preaching to Arjuna in the first chapter? No. He drives out there. He says, "Drive me into the middle." Krishna laughs. He thinks this is going to be good. You know, drives out into the middle, and that. So, you know, you want to see your scene now, like that. So the acharyas give all kinds of commentaries on what Krishna was saying at that time. You know, like that. And Krishna was kind of like poking him.
Knock
like
yourself out.
You know, but then when Arjuna surrenders, then he instructs. So that's the point. So a surrendered soul, Krishna will instruct. But someone who's not surrendered, the devotees still go out and, you know, expose them to Krishna consciousness anyway. So that's why, as a devotee, means if Krishna means Advaitacharya is Mahavishnu, he's the supreme, you know, he's the supreme Lord. So then, why couldn't he save them? Because no one's interested. So, but the point is you can only be liberated by God's grace. But God will only give that grace if you're interested. So they're not interested. So only the devotee will preach to you, even though you're not interested. But just because he's being preached to, how are you going to get liberated? So you have to have God in the form of a devotee. That would be effective. Therefore, Advaitacharya prayed for Lord Chaitanya's descent. Does that make sense? So the devotees following, you know, in the line of Lord Chaitanya, they preach. So that's why it says either him or his devotee.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki Jaya Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jaya Nityananda Gaura.